Welcome to the Albuquerque Theatre Guild's weekly podcast. I'm Mike Miller, and I'm your host. Join us every week right here where you'll hear what's happening in performance in Albuquerque. We'll keep a running calendar of shows opening and closing and talk to interesting people involved in entertainment here in Albuquerque. This time, our special guest is director Phil Shortell, who talks with us about Love, Loss, and What I Wore, playing one week only at the Adobe. He'll be joined by Jean Efron, who will give us her perspective as an actor in the show and reminisce with me about some of our earlier theater experiences in Albuquerque. But before we get to Phil and Jean, let's look at what's on stage now and what's coming up. Bonnie and Clyde continues at MTS Center for Theater and runs through February 25th, as does Mrs. Warren's Profession 2.0 at the Oxdog. Love, Loss, and What I Wore plays at the Adobe for a short run, opening on the 16th and closing on the 18th. Mary Stewart also opens on the 16th at the Vortex and runs through March 11th. Moomin Chance comes to Popejoy for a matinee performance on the 17th. Then Opera Southwest presents five performances of Hector Armiento's world premiere opera Bless Me Ultima, based on Rodolfo Anaya's well-known book of the same name. It plays at the Hispanic Cultural Center February 18th through the 25th. And Baskerville, a Sherlock Holmes mystery, comes to Popejoy on Friday the 23rd for two performances only. Upcoming auditions include Moon Over Buffalo at the Adobe Theater March 10th and 11th. And the Albuquerque Theater Guild presents Eat, Drink, and Be Merry, Creating Dinner Theater at the Sheraton Albuquerque Uptown on February 17th at 2:30. The presentation will feature Richard and Cheryl Atkins from East Mountain Community Theater and Warren and Courtney Wilgus of the Foul Play Cafe. Shows coming in March include The Effect, Glengarry Glen Ross, Art, A Chorus Line, Sister Act, Ragtime, Wish Upon a Star, and You're Funny, But You Don't Look Jewish. For times, tickets, and or information on any of these events, please revisit the Albuquerque Theatre Guild's website at www.abqtheatre.com. That's www.abqtheatre.com. And now let's ask Phil Shortell and Jean Efron to join us for part two of this week's podcast. Jean, welcome.
Phil, welcome.
Thank you very much for having us, Mike.
Okay. Thank you. It's wonderful to be here.
It's wonderful to have you. We're talking today, though, about a show that Phil is directing, mm-hmm. and Jean is one of the actors, characters, persons, people in the performance on stage, and this is at the Adobe Theater.
It's going to be at the Adobe February 16th, 17th, and 18th, and we're also taking it out for two shows at local senior facilities, at La Vida Llena on the 21st of February and at the Meadowlark Senior Center in Rio Rancho on the 28th.
That's good to know. That'll be good for us. Mm-hmm. I have experience with Meadowlark. I don't have experience with La Vida Llena, but both of them have good reputations, I think, and so they'll welcome you.
This is a part of an ongoing thing that we're going to try to do at the Adobe, taking shows out to people who can't necessarily always come to us. And we plan to do several more this year if we can do it.
Ah, good. Very nice. So, I hope somebody will bring some to me when I get to be in that category. Jean, I want to back up here a little. We now have promoted the show properly. What I want to do is back up and talk about you guys a little bit and how you got into theater and entertainment and what your background is. So, Jean, I'm going to ask you that very question.
Okay. Well, when Phil called me and said that we were going to do this today, I started thinking about my career. So I went into the room 2 days ago. I went into the room where I have all of everything I've ever done in, you know, in those manila envelopes, mm-hmm. and stacks of them. And I thought, my God, I've been here for 42 years, and I got, was kind of a late starter with theater, and didn't get started until my mid-50s. So here is this stack of manila envelopes, and I started tearing them out. And it took a good 2 hours. I'm still not done. But I have to tell you, Mike, it brought back so many wonderful memories. I found myself laughing at some of the things we've done. And that's why I'm so glad I had this opportunity, because everything is now all over the floor in that room, having to be put back again in chronological order. And I think, okay, so I'm going to make a pile of theater. I'm going to make a pile of commercial. I'm going to make a pile of movies. And I thought, oh, hell, I'm just going to put them all back in the closet and wait for another interview. But anyway, I didn't get started until I was, again, in my mid-50s. And I came to Albuquerque. All my kids were grown. And I really wanted to get my toe in the water of theater, having always loved theater, the arts. And so I sort of started taking a lot of acting classes. And one of the wonderful gentlemen, a wonderful gentleman by the name of Patrick Farron.
I remember Patrick.
Yes, wonderful, wonderful acting class. I started taking his classes. And then I became kind of an aficionado of classes, and thought, this is what I need to do. This is what I really need to do. And so for a long time, I was with Patrick. And one of the wonderful things he did, tell me if I'm running out of time here, Mike. One of the wonderful things Patrick did was to take a group of us. We were nine, and this was 11 years ago. He took us to L.A., he took the whole class to L.A. We met casting directors. We met agents. We took improv classes. We took master classes there for the week. We were given tips on interviewing and auditioning. I still have the book, the three-ring notebook that we had made up when he took us there. And it was such an invaluable tool. And even today, I tell young people out there, learn your craft. Learn your craft. Take as many classes as you can. Learn, keep learning your craft. You're never, never finished learning your craft. So after that, I managed to get myself an agent. I started out with Debbie Ford, mm-hmm. and Dennis.
Yep, they were my agents for a long time.
Yeah, it was just beautiful. In fact, Patrick was right across the aisle from where Dennis had his business.
Right.
Yeah, we'd go out of Patrick's door at the end of class and walk into Dennis's place and have a wonderful visit with him. Anyway, I decided I needed to get an agent, and of course it was Debbie. And then Debbie retired, and it morphed. It was Applause Talent Agency, and it kind of morphed into Lenny Davey, took it over, and then she got rid of it, and now it's with Carissa Mitchell. And that's who I've been with all of these years.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So as a result of that, I've gotten a lot of wonderful commercials, a lot of wonderful TV series, movies. I'm still going pretty strong. It's slowed down a little bit, and I think it's probably my age. There's probably less material now for for people in their, octogenarian years.
Hey, Gene, that was one beautiful thing you did on Better Call Saul. And so that was somebody your age, and you did a wonderful job in multiple episodes there.
Yeah, I was very, very fortunate to get that gig. Hopefully, with season four, they will bring Irene back. But in the meantime, I am enjoying exactly what I'm doing and loving the fact that we're going to do Love, Loss, and What I Wore Again.
Mm-hmm. All right. So, what would you? Let's go to Phil for a minute. Talk about your background, Phil. Where do you come from?
Where do I come from?
The entertainment.
I rejoined the theater world 6 years ago after a brief 34-year hiatus. I had moved to Albuquerque about 13 years ago, and then suddenly one day realized, I was no longer traveling on business and stuff, and I could get back into theater. Mm-hmm. And so I went down and auditioned for a show at the Adobe Theater, and I got the part. And that was not quite 6 years ago now, and since that time I've done about 26, 27 shows.
Wow. You theater people, you're really busy the time.
Hey, you're one of us. Come on.
Yes, you are, Mike. You know that.
I remember doing 13 shows in 12 months when we had the Keystone back in the late 80s. It was an amazing time.
Yeah. Anyway, just finishing up the whole background thing. Yeah. There was a 34-year hiatus. I was active in theater in the New York area before that. And I come from a theatrical family. My mother was a professional and actually made it to Broadway twice.
Wow. All right, then. Similar backgrounds, then. My family was not professional, although they have been entertainment, clear back to my grandfather. My great-grandfather. So there's a lot of theater there. My grandkids are doing theater now, which is kind of satisfying. But what did you do? I mean, it goes way back. I understand that.
Mm-hmm.
What did you do? What are your favorites?
Favorites? Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, of course, Love, Loss, and What I Wore. This is the fourth or the fifth time I've directed it with you.
This is, I think, the fifth. Fifth or sixth.
Time flies when you're having so much fun. I can't. It really does.
So let me ask you a question real quick as an insertion.
Sure.
Does she have her lines yet?
Well, actually, we have to do something here. A, it's a reading.
Okay? But I'm practically off book.
But I was just about to say that. But Jean is, for all intents and purposes, off book in a reading.
Yes. I worked with Jean.
Mm-hmm.
So...
favorites.
Well, we all say the current one's our favorite. Yeah. Otherwise, we have problems with the cast we're working with. But, in history that long, there are some that stand out.
Oh, sure.
Okay. Can I go?
You go.
Because this is where I had a ball pulling all this stuff out of the closet, and I wrote it down. Flicks on 66.
Yes, indeed.
Remember?
Oh, yes.
That was 2003. And then I believe it did change to the Duke City Shootout.
It went through several names.
Right. And that was 2008. And that's when I was in a little short film called Easy Pickens.
Yep.
And that night, I was chosen to be the best actress of that film, Duke City Shootout.
Right.
I wasn't there. I was doing a play over at the Hispanic Cultural Center.
Okay.
That night. So I wasn't there to accept my little statue. But I got it the next day.
Mm-hmm.
I also wrote down the 48-hour film.
48-hour film festival.
Film project, right? And of course, your play, your film, Clunker, where I met Basil Hoffman, and I wanted to ask you, we had more fun with that. It was a beautiful play. Tish wrote that play.
Yes, she did.
And we were brother and sister.
That's correct.
Basil and I were
That's
brother
correct.
And sister. And, you know, there were some pretty intense scenes there with Basil. I remember that with great affection. And, you know, I keep wanting to say, hey, Mike, what happened to it? Where'd it go?
It's bunker. It's in development hell as well. Like a lot of movies tend to be.
Right.
Yeah.
We have found some people who want to help us revive it, so we're going to see where it goes this year.
Oh, great.
So,
well, you better hurry up before I get too old.
Well, I think Basil's saying the same thing, but I don't think, you know, I don't think you're ever going to be too old.
No, I won't. I won't.
Every time I hear Jean's in this, it's like, oh, good.
She's still above ground.
Still above ground. Well, stop and think about how many of the people that we have worked with over the years are not.
Yeah.
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 And it's just amazing to me that, you know, we're still here and we're still doing it.
We just lost one who was actually my dialect coach for Irish in my first show in Albuquerque, which was Is Life Worth Living? And I've worked with Alan as a dialect coach also in Juneau and the Peacock.
Right. We're talking, of course, about Alan Hudson.
Who was just a wonderful man.
Right. He was. Worked with him several times. He was my dialect coach.
Yeah.
In the Iceman Comet, we did that.
I first met Alan when we did Beauty Queen of Linane. He was in that, and Marty directed it.
Mm-hmm.
He was the dialect coach. And I remember the review. Ann Ryan was the reviewer, and she was a tough nut. But what she said was, not once during that play did that dialect falter. Not once. And I attribute that to Alan.
Mm-hmm. Right.
To Alan Hudson. Yeah, he'll be dearly, dearly missed.
He's a resource that was leaves a large hole in the community, that's for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, what about...
For me, favorites?
Yeah, things that stick out.
Theatrically, I'm going to go just back to last year with The Iceman Cometh, of course, which you also were involved in, and Alan as on stage that time, too. That was a wonderful opportunity to sweat about learning an enormous number of lines. I think my other favorites, it's hard, and I don't want to pick things and slight some others, but certainly Souvenir, which we did at the Adobe, which was a two-person show, that stretched me quite a bit because I had to pick up and go back to getting my piano skills up to date, and that was after a lot of neglect. And
is there anything you don't do?
Yes, I'm sure there is. Those things that are forbidden by the Witness Protection Program.
Oh.
I can't, of course.
You didn't do it in plain sight, did you?
No, I can't leave out Death of a Salesman either.
Right.
But, you know, 20-some-odd shows, and just about every one of them has been a wonderful experience. And, of course, All Is Calm, which I've done 3 times.
Mm-hmm.
And I would love to do that show. I think, but that's the last time for me. If it does come back next year, it's going to come back without me.
Why is that, Phil?
I think it's time for me to make room for somebody else to come in if they're going to do it. Because I've done all 3 of the versions that were done here.
Okay.
And I think it's time for me to pursue something else at Christmas time.
Okay.
Whether that is trying to get presents from people or do another show.
Okay.
So I have ideas about that. Prior to that, prior to before that 34-year minor hiatus, I think my favorite one was the show Carnival, where I got to play Marco the Magnificent, the magician. And to do that, I had to learn a whole bunch of magic tricks, including grand illusions.
Ah.
And that was a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Of course, it does take some of the flavor out of watching magic now when you can figure out how some of the things are done, but... It's still amazing that you can do those things and get people to suspend their disbelief. For
yes.
That.
Yes. You would have liked growing up in my father's household.
Mm-hmm.
He knew a lot of the magicians in Albuquerque, and so I got to learn a lot of the stuff that was local. And then, of course, he paid attention to all of the big grand illusion stuff, as you say. And so it was kind of fun, but you're right.
And sometimes stuff can go wrong. We had one performance of that. There's a sword box trick in Carnival, which is in a song with the two married couple, the magician and his wife assistant, singing a song, arguing with each other all through it. And in one of the performances, I'm not going to give away the whole bit of the trick,
sure.
But she couldn't get herself into the right position in the trunk. And we're singing and trying to figure out, how do we complete this? She finally slid where she had to go, and we could push the swords.
Wow.
While we're singing and going, oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, okay, yeah. Ah. And the song is, it was always, always you. And with every you, he shoves another sword into the box.
Okay, sure. Wow.
Those things
happen. Those are the wrong ones to go wrong.
They're unforgettable things to happen
they
on stage.
They are indeed unforgettable.
I know. Well,
what about you, Jean? What sort of unforgettable things stand out for you?
I was just thinking about my theater experiences, and I cannot say I have a favorite one. I have done some beautiful, beautiful theater work. I've done Foxfire, Trip to Bountiful, Driving Miss Daisy, Beauty Queen of Lynn. Each one of them was a gem, but we had a boo-boo in Marvin's room, and this was way, way back. There's two youngsters that are in Marvin's room. And, of course, when it was time for these kids to come on stage, no kids. So we're out there just trying to fill in this dead space, and the stage manager's in the back looking for these kids. It was at the Vortex. You remember, mm-hmm. You could go out the back door.
Yes, I remember.
Go out the back door, and there they were just throwing ball back and forth to one another in the alley.
And missed their entrance.
Yeah. But the first show that I did was Diary of Anne Frank, and then mm-hmm. the second one, which was the Albuquerque Little Theater, called Isn't It Romantic? And I fell in love with ALT. I mm-hmm. loved Albuquerque Little Theater.
That's nice to work in that space. It really is.
And for many, many years, I did at least two shows a year there. It was almost a place that I called home.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, and I just loved mm-hmm. when Larry was there. But after he left, I never went back.
Yeah. I'm going to go and say that even though I love the ALT space and all the different spaces in the Vortex, too, I think my favorite is always the Adobe. It's the first place I played in Albuquerque, and it has an intimacy that no other theater in town can come to because of the wraparound audience.
Right. Well, I felt that way about the Vortex in mm-hmm. the old Vortex.
When the roof wasn't leaking.
Well, you know, you get used to those things, and you didn't have to go down into the cellar.
Yeah.
Do you remember Skin of Our Teeth that Tish and I produced and directed? A very brilliant actor who is no longer with us, Lou Baker, played the carnival guy sitting, reading a newspaper, and I don't remember what the whole bit was. But it rained like crazy one night, and the thunder would go off, and he would look up, and he would just look at the dripping water on his newspaper. He got up one night and moved his chair over and continued like
there you
nothing
go.
Was happening.
Lou Baker. Remember him. He was in our class, Patrick Ferrin's class. He went to L.A. with us, with Lou Baker.
Yeah. He was one of those actors who had a talent that if that was the talent you wanted, Lou was the guy
mm-hmm.
to get it. Because nobody mm-hmm. else could do mm-hmm. Lou Baker.
Yeah.
And he was, you know, just...
Tragically, though, his life came to an end.
Well, it did. It did.
Yeah.
And I don't think I really want to go too deep into the details on it, but just to say he was a good guy and he's no longer with us.
Well, I'm mm-hmm. glad you brought up that little thing that he did.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And you and I worked... What were we doing first?
Oh, my God, we were on stage at ALT. You Can't Take It With You?
You Can't Take It With You.
Oh,
right.
My God.
Yes, yes.
Bill Derringer.
Yep.
Bill Derringer, who's
no longer
with us. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, we had some good times on that stage. And
I played Grandpa Vanderhoff.
Okay, of course.
I was way too young to play that role.
But you did it.
But I did it.
Yeah.
We did it. That was a show we had a very good time on. What is the funniest thing, I guess, that you've seen in your careers? What's happened on stage that just literally broke everybody?
Oh, you know, I don't know about that. About
I have one.
You have one?
I have one. The play was called Dearly Departed.
That was at the Adobe, as I recall.
No, was at Albuquerque Little Theater.
Oh, all right.
I was, Fred Schwab was my husband, and we're going to this funeral. We're going to this funeral. Fred is on oxygen, and I am, you know, and he's standing beside me, and we're looking at the body, and we're you know, behaving in the way we should behave, mournfully, sorrowfully at the body. Then we come back, and then we sit down, okay? Now, Fred has his long tube from the oxygen, and I sit on it. I sit on the tube, and Fred is now unable to breathe. And I am not paying any attention to Fred as he is slowly losing consciousness beside me. And the audience just cracked everybody up. I mean, it stopped the show. Dearly Departed. That was my funny one.
I have a couple of different ones, but the one that I was involved in, it wasn't funny at the time. And the audience didn't even know. But I did, many years ago, back before the hiatus, I did a production of Barefoot in the Park, and I was Victor Velasco. And in the scene, after when they go into the apartment, Corey's apartment, they're supposed to have drinks. One night, somebody filled my glass with straight 151 proof rum. And the thing was with Victor, what he was supposed to do, he was supposed to pick up the glass and go chug it. Well, I've got it now in my mouth, and I realize this is not the right stuff in there. And there's no choice but to swallow it. And then yell like mad at the stage manager when I got off stage. Straight 151 proof rum.
Yeah. You remember Michael Blum?
Oh, yes.
Okay. He was also in You Can't Take It With
Me. He was.
So was
Lou Baker.
Yes. Oh, I don't remember that Lou was in there.
He played Mr. DePinna.
Oh my gosh. Oh, I'm so glad you remember that, Mike.
Yeah.
But anyway, Michael Blum is on the other side. We're both in the wings, and he turns around and he moons me.
Michael,
Yeah. I'm telling you this, Michael. You did it. In case you hear this podcast.
Oh, I'll make sure he does.
I was appalled. But we both went on and performed.
Yeah, lots of things happen. People don't know it sometimes. Sometimes they can see it in the opening night performance of Little Shop of Horrors.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
They had just painted the floor before, and it was glazed.
Ox Dog.
Right. There's a scene where Mushnick has to go off stage so that Seymour can talk to the plant, and they're going to murder Mushnick. Well, the floor was slick as glass. I start to move off stage, and my feet come out from under me, and I crash into the florist's counter. And I'm on the floor saying, okay, now, how do I get off stage here? I got off stage crawling on hands and knees through the door, and then I had to see if I could stand, because I had to come back up to be murdered.
The best traditions of how to make the show go on without the audience realizing it's not part of it.
Absolutely. I thought you were going to tell me you got stuck. Your feet got stuck on the floor, which was...
No. It was...
You slipped.
I slipped because the plant had leaves, you know, that were made of cloth.
Yeah, yeah.
And I stepped on one of the leaves and wham.
There was, talking about painted floors, like at the old Adobe, out at the old church in Corrales, where we did a number of shows, they had just painted the stage that morning of opening day. And it was a musical review. I don't remember off the top of my head who had put it up now, but I was in the audience, and we all went to see everybody, went to see each other's shows. And the dancers are going... trying to maintain a rhythm and sing along at the same time.
I have one of those too. Back many, many years ago in Summer Stock in Cape May, New Jersey, a production of Black Comedy, where I had to take a fall down the stairs.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, they painted the railings of the stairs half an hour before curtain. And so after I fall down the stairs, I get up and my suit has got stripes on it.
Yeah.
One of these days, ask Tish about my suit stripe story.
One of these days.
Well, hey, we could probably swap stories for the rest of quite
a while.
For a while, but I think we want to talk a little bit about the show now.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
Theoretically, we're here to talk about the show and some inside information. So we have a show with, what, five characters? Is that correct?
No, it's five women. Gingy, that's Jean, is the only one who plays the same part throughout the show.
Okay.
And the other four women play multiple roles.
All right. And so a lot of quick changes? And
no.
Except you're reading?
No, it's reading, but the show was designed as a reading. That's how Nora and Delia Ephron wrote it. They didn't write it to be memorized because they're little snapshots of things in the characters' lives that they remember. And they associate, in effect, pieces of clothing, usually, with mm-hmm. with different romantic or not-so-romantic things in their lives as they go along. But this is something I always have to point out to people. It's five women, and the stories are about women's attire and things that happened in their lives. But if you can't, as a man, relate to these things, there is something wrong with you. Because every single one of these stories I can relate something to, and that's not even stretching. And there's some of the stories that people won't believe that I could relate directly to, but I can. Yes, I teased you on that.
Oh, I have to go see this, I guess.
Oh, you do, Mike.
Yes,
you do.
One of these that I do.
But just from the very beginning, Gingy's opening monologue when she says how you could get polio. And the worst one was by swallowing a fly. I remember being told that when I was a kid.
Right,
that you could get polio from swallowing a fly or going to the local pool.
I remember the story about going to the local pool, but I don't remember being told about a fly.
Oh, in my family, you could get polio from anything.
Yeah, well.
Right, I mean.
It was such a frightening disease back then. I know
polio
survivors. And,
yeah.
I was... Eileen Beckerman wrote the book when she was 60 years old, mm-hmm. Love, Loss, and What I Wore. And it's actually, she remembers clothing and the circumstances surrounding a particular outfit.
Mm-hmm.
And these stories that the other four women talk about also have to do with apparel, shoes, bras,
shirts,
wedding dresses. It's a fascinating anthology of information, of stories.
Mm.
And I think it will be enjoyed, and it is enjoyed by people of all ages, because we've had people of all ages in our audiences. But I have to tell you, one of the most gratifying presentations we did was when we went to Bear Canyon,
mm-hmm.
okay?
Mm-hmm.
And there's this sea of gray hair out there with the oxygen and with the walkers and with, you know, what she say, and which is why I'm glad we're gonna have mics now.
Right.
But you would see people nodding and smiling, and you just felt the energy going from us, these five women, out to that audience. And that happens every time we put this
presentation. Every single time. And again, it happens with the men as well, because you'll find something there in that story that hits home. Not from the swallowing a fly, and I swear that is true, even down to the paper dress for me, and I will not tell you what the paper dress story is, and I will only tell people in private how I relate to the paper dress. And I know that doesn't mean I was wearing it, but it relates to a very embarrassing incident that happened in my life not all that long ago.
Okay. Is there a Me Too story behind that?
No, it's not a Me Too.
Good.
This is not a Me Too play. It's an us two play.
Right.
All of us.
Right.
Yeah, good.
Right. And every time I do it, every time, and I've been Gingy, I think this is the fifth or sixth yeah. time I've had the role of Gingy, there's something different. There's something new. It's always new. Now, Eileen Beckerman, I've been in touch with her.
Have you then?
Yes, because I had some questions about her stories, and I got in touch with her, and she responded. So we've kind of been talking to one another. She's 82 now. I'm 85. So we're kind of kindred spirits here.
You're still a kid.
Yeah, still a kid.
Wow.
Still a kid.
Actually, you're the kid in the room, Mike.
You are.
I understand that. We had that discussion the other day. Wow.
You are the kid.
I am the kid. Even at this not really advanced stage in this room, I guess. But
I know.
So how many other people in the cast? Five women?
They're a total of five women and the stage manager who shifts some things around for people.
Okay. Who are the other players?
Okay, going from stage left to right, we have of course Jean, and then we have Leslie Richards.
Uh-huh.
Then we have Gail Spidle.
Uh-huh.
Linda Williams, and Georgia Athern.
No kidding.
And I love the fact
that what a powerhouse cast.
It is.
Yeah, these we've had different groups.
Yes.
And I believe that this is one of the best ones. I mean, they've all been great. These women are a little older, more mature, and I think that adds.
I think it helps them relate to the stories
right.
a little more. And
absolutely.
You know, Gail, for one, Jessica Gail tells a, and she's done this before for, in Love, Loss, and What I Wore. She does a monologue about a cancer survivor, and she relates
and
to
she
that
is,
because she
yes.
is a cancer survivor.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
You know, I think that one of the things that I tell folks, young people come to me and say, well, how do I get to be an actor? I say, well, first go get some life experience.
Yeah.
And that's really quite clear here that these women have the life experience to tell the kind of stories you're talking about.
I agree.
So.
And they're doing an absolutely wonderful job. We had our first run-through, and on the first run-through, it went so smoothly, you wouldn't even, I couldn't believe it. We finished the first run through in 92 minutes, so we're about a minute off my target.
Mm-hmm. Ah.
After one run through.
So you want it at 91?
I want it at 90, but I'll settle for 91.
Oh, okay.
But we have to factor in some time there for the laughter from the audience, which is usually uproarious at some of the things.
The audience laughs.
Yeah, the audience laughs because even though some of these things are touching and sad in some ways, they're also extremely funny.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
Talk about the Adobe and how the newly remodeled Adobe.
Yeah, the Adobe looks absolutely gorgeous. And for those of you who've been there before, wait till you see the bathrooms. No more steps to climb.
Right.
No, they're all brand new and beautiful and fully ADA compliant.
Right.
And the theater has been painted internally and really looks good.
Beautiful.
And now are there extra toilet facilities?
Yes, there are.
Lines are not as long?
They should not be as long. And the other thing about that is now there are toilet facilities for the actors.
Oh, well, that's a different...
The old secret of the Adobe, what we had to do before a show started, as soon as all the people were in place, they would close the curtain there to this side and go into the green room, and the stage manager would shout a potty call for the actors.
Right.
And the same thing after the end of the first act. Get everybody back in their seats a little bit ahead of time, close the curtain, potty call.
Back in the days of the old Vortex, back when something Gene was referring to earlier, we had Burger King out the back door. Burger King became known to casts there as the Bathroom of the Stars.
I remember.
Great. So, give me the dates again.
February 16th, 17th, and 18th at the Adobe. That's the 16th and 17th at 7:30. The 18th at 2 p.m. in the afternoon. That's a Sunday. The La Vida Yena is closed, of course, just to their residents.
Mm-hmm.
And the Meadowlark Senior Center is on the 28th. And that would be open, I guess, to anybody who's a member of the Senior Center there.
Terrific.
And tickets at are $10.
Tickets are $10. Yeah, it's a bargain.
And I don't think you need to even make reservations. You probably.
But wouldn't hurt. You know, I mean, you remember the last time we did it at the Adobe, we sold out.
Yeah, right, right. Okay.
So, you know, we hope that you will get to come and see it. It's one of the warmest shows I have ever been involved in. It is hilarious at the same time. You'll love it.
Mm-hmm. Phil Tortell, Jean Efron, thank you for being with us today.
Thank you for having us, Mike.
Our pleasure. Thanks, Mike.
That does it for this week's show. Join us again next week when our guests will be Colleen McClure and Joe Feldman with the West End Productions to talk about The Effect by Lucy Prebble. The Albuquerque Theatre Guild's podcast is the place where you can keep up to date on what's playing and hear special features like performance interviews and a bit of insider knowledge. We hope that you're enjoying our programs. If you are, please comment and like us and share with your friends on other social media platforms. Until we're together again, go see some live performance art, and we'll look for you right back here next time.